this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast for October 19th. My special guest this week is Ed Rutherford. Hello, Ed.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Great. And Ed is an adapter and director of a brand new show. Tell us about it.
The show is The Last Unicorn, and what it is a world premiere stage adaptation of a fantasy novel that was written back in the 60s by a really great fantasy author named Peter S. Beagle. And some people who aren't familiar with the book might also know the story because they made an excellent animated movie adaptation of it in the 80s. Actually, that was sort of the first time I encountered the story when I was a kid in the 80s. And it had just a sort of an all-star voice cast with Angela Lansbury and Christopher Lee, Tammy Grimes, Mia Farrow, Alan Arkin.
Wow.
Yeah. It was one of my favorite movies growing up as a kid. How I encountered the story is watching the movie over and over when I was little, and then when I got a little bit older, I found out, there's a book version that it's based on. I read the book, and the book was just fantastic. I still have a copy. I've worn out a few copies over the years. And especially as I got older and became more interested in theater, I decided that one of my sort of big dream projects was to try to realize this story on stage. And the story is it's a great one. It's sort of an old-fashioned classical fairy tale, but updated and retold in a more contemporary way. When you read it, it feels a lot like one of those Grimm's fairy tales, even though it was written in the 1960s. It tells the tale of a unicorn, the last unicorn in all the world, who lives in a forest all alone, and she's quite happy there until one day she hears a pair of hunters traveling through her forest conversing, and they're talking about how the forest is kept by the unicorn, and it's a good thing because she's the last one in all the world. And the idea that she's the last of her kind, that every other creature of her species has vanished and she didn't even know it, is so disturbing to her that she sets out on this quest to discover what's happened to the rest of her people. And so it's a classical quest story. She encounters many enemies and friends and many troubles along the way, including two great companions who are sort of the other major protagonists of the show. A very unskilled magician named Schmendrick the Magician, who...
sounds fantastic. So the unicorn is a female?
Oh, yeah, it's a she. And there's boar unicorns, too, but okay. The protagonist is female. And so she encounters Schmendrick the Magician, who... a singularly unskilled wizard who wants to find real magic of his own, and also a scullery maid named Molly Grew, who's got sort of a sharp tongue, but she's golden-hearted, and she, along the way, she discovers how to become really warm and nurturing, too. So there's lots of adventures, including monsters and witches and heroes fighting dragons.
It's going to be interesting to see how you do it in the intimate stage at City Lit.
Yeah, well, one thing we were helped with is I applied for a grant from the Department of Cultural Affairs last year. Part of their grant program they make to individual artists for specific projects. And I got a grant from them to train with a sort of master mask maker and puppeteer named Jeff Semmerling here in town.
Excellent.
And so throughout the year, I was training with him and basically learning how to build some masks and puppets of my own, some of which appear on stage in the show.
Terrific. So some of the characters are masked?
Yep, some of the characters will
and
be masked.
And you do have some puppets?
Yes, we do have some puppets. Not a huge number, but a modest amount of puppetry.
So now that begs the question, is this a children's show?
No, definitely not. That's something I sort of emphasized from the very beginning. I think the first actual line of the play even is damn.
Oh, okay.
It's a fairy tale, but it's definitely a fairy tale for grown-ups. A lot of the themes and the ideas and the sensibilities are very much adult. Part of what the show does, in addition to telling what I think is a really compelling, entertaining story, is also to explore what it means to be human, because the unicorn is not human, but as she goes on her journey, she learns a lot more by encountering men about the human condition, about what it means to be mortal, because in the world of the story, unicorns are immortal. They live forever, which is, you know, obviously humans don't do that. And to appreciate the beauty and the fragility of human life in all its ugliness and suffering is sort of part of the learning experience that she undergoes.
So how would you classify the show?
I would consider it an adult fairy tale.
Okay. Is it a comic-driven, dramatic?
It's kind of, I have to admit, it's sort of this glorious hodgepodge of the two, because some of the scenes are very dramatic and the, you know, the storyline we take very seriously, but it was very important to me. And also when you read the book, clearly very important to Peter S. Beagle when he wrote the novel, that there's also plenty of humor, plenty of opportunity for laughs, poking fun a little bit at some of the fairy tale tropes that he's using. For example, the idea of the prince who slays a dragon to win the heart of a princess. Or the original idea in the unicorn myth of a virginal maiden that is the only creature that a unicorn will allow to touch a unicorn. A lot of those ideas sort of get turned on their head throughout the story.
Okay, yeah. So you get your set of rules.
Yeah.
All right. So tell us a couple of the... Oh, the author's coming in opening night.
That's right. We were very excited to hear about this. The author himself, Peter S. Beagle, is going to be at the October 17th and October 18th performances opening weekend. He's going to participate in a post-show discussion with the audience and actors and stuff after the show.
So tell us how you got the rights to this. I mean, it's got to be scary to get the stage rights to a hit book that's really reached cult status by now.
Yeah. I've had to do a few adaptations in the past, and sort of my experience having to get permission or get the rights with the appropriate people for those stories, mostly short stories, stood me in good stead. I think just from my own experience, sometimes the most difficult part about getting the rights to something is just finding out the right person to ask, hunting them down, because sometimes who actually owns the rights to a piece of fiction, for example, aren't as obvious as you might think. Sometimes they pass away from the author to other people, mm-hmm. or if the author dies, whoever manages the estate is the person.
Yeah,
and
so you end up with some lawyer or literary agent.
Exactly.
Who might be, has another agenda and so forth.
So in this particular case, way back in 2004, I'd participated in the Bailiwick Directors Festival, and it was a festival on adaptation. So I did an adaptation of a short story by Peter S. Beagle called "Come, Lady Death." It's a wonderful short story. It's about it's set in a historical Britain where this rich old lady decides that she wants death to be a guest at her next big party, and sort of what ensues from that.
Interesting idea.
Yeah, and so I got the permission that time from Peter S. Beagle's literary agent. I managed to track that person down, got the rights to do just a one weekend presentation of a stage adaptation of that story. And after that was done, I was contacted by Peter S. Beagle's business manager, Connor Cochran, who requested if we had any video of the performance or a copy of the script. He wanted to just take a look at it and see what we'd done. And
Yes. Interesting. So there's a trust factor there.
Yeah, exactly. And apparently he liked what I did with the adaptation of Come Lady Death enough that a year or so down the line, when I felt like Promethean Theater Ensemble was in a place where we could seriously, you know, attempt a project this large, I was able to call them up and float the idea to them. And it actually wound up being surprisingly easy. Once you find the right person to ask and they know that you're serious about it.
And that you did a good job on the small one. Yeah,
it was pretty easy to just draw up a temporary license to do the production.
Well, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
You think Promethean has grown enough? Because I've seen some good productions. Your company's.
The over time we've definitely been able to do larger and larger shows, and this is one of the largest we've ever done. 14 people in the cast, which is the same number of people we had in Measure for Measure last season.
Yeah, and so, that was an ambitious show.
Yeah,
man.
So knowing that we could actually do a show that large in the space at CityLit just clarified for me that now is the time. Now is the time to really take a look at doing this project more seriously.
Well, you guys have grown as a theater company.
Yeah, definitely.
You've got some good players in this.
Yeah, and we're actually going to have several of them featured in this production. We have ensemble members Kyla Embry playing the unicorn, and Derek Jarvis, who played Elbow in that production of Measure for Measure.
Yes, I liked
sort of
him.
Bumbling guard.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to be playing several different roles. It's a piece of story theater, so most of the actors actually are playing 5, 6, even 7 different parts throughout the evening. Ensemble member Nick Lake, who you might remember, played Lucio in Measure for Measure.
Yeah, he's another one I like.
He's back as Schmendrick, the incompetent magician.
He was a strong comic,
yeah. And then Brian Pastor, who played Angelo Measure for Measure is going to be back playing Prince Lear. There's sort of a wicked king named King Haggard, who's the antagonist of...
Well, Brian's a good actor. He's a big imposing guy on the stage, too. Yeah.
There's a wicked king named King Haggard in the story, who's sort of the antagonist of the piece. And he's got a son who also figures really importantly, named Prince Lear, who is a lot more happy-go-lucky and a lot nicer than King Haggard is. And Brian Pastor's going to be playing that part, too. And at complimenting them, we also have 10 more very skilled actors with a wide range of skill sets. Some of them can sing. A couple of them have some tumbling and acrobatic skills. And just I'm really pleased with the ensemble we've put together to tell this story.
So this is quite a project for you. Not only did you adapt it, but you are directing.
Yes, I am directing it. I kind of and it sort of has to do with some of my influences. I consider a big influence on me for doing this piece to be Mary Zimmerman. You might remember I mentioned my affection for her work in the last interview we did together. And actually, I don't think I ever would have attempted this adaptation if I'd never seen a work of hers, especially that seminal production of The Odyssey that she did at the Goodman several seasons back. It was one of the first shows I ever saw when I moved to Chicago.
Wow. It's a nice introduction to Chicago.
Yeah, it was great. And I grew up, you know, loving fantasy stories, The Last Unicorn, of course, but also Greek mythology. And to see a story I knew and loved so well, that was so epic and had so many characters and so many different subplots that you had to follow, up there clear as day with a huge audience responding to it in the Goodman Theater, just it made it clear to me that it gave me permission to be ambitious about the stories that I wanted to tell, because Chicago theater has the aesthetic, has the tools to make that possible.
Yeah, and that's a good model.
Yeah.
Now you got to get Mary to come see the show.
I would love that.
Well, if you're listening, get a hold of Ed Rutherford, and I'm sure you'll find room for her, right? Yeah.
Yes. Oh, definitely. Mary, if you're listening, you definitely will definitely comp you. Come see it, please.
Wow. So, all right. So now that was your influence. And you were then waiting for timing.
Yes. Well, it takes a lot of careful planning. We really, the actual contract for doing the show, we knew for sure that we were going to be able, we didn't put ink to paper, but we knew for sure we were going to be able to reach terms to do the show over a year ago. I guess late spring of 2008. But finding the space, making sure that everyone else in the ensemble, because we're very democratic about picking our season, making sure everyone else in the ensemble was on board and enthusiastic about the project. You know, we have our own season selection process that's pretty lengthy. Just making sure that we'd taken all the steps we needed to make sure everyone was on board and excited before we, you know, started work on it was...
Is this your first for Promethean Theater original world production?
I come to think of it, it's the first fully scripted world premiere.
Okay.
But actually, our second season, we did an original Commedia dell'arte.
I remember that. Yeah, because I'm a big fan of it. Yeah,
original Commedia piece, The Light of Love, mm-hmm. Which it was also a world premiere, though it wasn't really fully scripted. A lot of it was really improvisational, mm-hmm. And actually, that had a happy ending as well. You may have probably already aware that that project and the people that worked together on that project loved doing Commedia so much that they went on to break off and form their own Commedia troupe, Chicago dell'arte.
Right.
That's been doing some fun shows.
Yeah, they just did a show not too long ago.
Yeah. Hampstead, Hooligan, and King Arthur's Court.
That's right.
Yep, Derek Jarvis was in that too. He's really funny.
Okay, well, but this is the first fully original show.
First full-length scripted world premiere production.
Have any trouble selling the ensemble on it? Or are they hip?
Well, I think everyone was excited about it once they read the script. It was a very large undertaking, and I think everyone needed to be reassured that it was the right script at the right time. You know, the right people in charge and all that sort of thing.
Well, I think your timing couldn't be better because we need good original shows.
Yeah,
and this is what Chicago small storefront theaters about.
Yep.
Pushing the envelope. So I can't wait to see it.
I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure I will. I like shows like this. But now let's go a little further. Give us some reasons why people should come see this show.
Okay. They should come see it because it's funny and fantastical It's just a really engaging story. I think we as a company really try to focus on storytelling to the audience. And part of that is really making sure that it's not just, you know, important themes, but that it's also a pretty good time. And I think we'll really be showing the audience a pretty good time on this one.
Good. So this is entertainment with the big E.
Yes, yeah, okay. I'd say so.
And with a little bit of comedy and a little
high drama.
A little
bit of everything. It's just it's sort of this collage of different, you know, serious and the comic, you know, really deeply felt realistic acting with like big monster puppet. It's mm-hmm. being moved around. And movement sequences, some original music. We have our sound designers also composed melodies for a few songs that are in the show that are in the original novel. Characters have reasons to sing. So though I wouldn't say it's a full-fledged musical by any stretch of the imagination.
But there are a couple songs?
Yeah, there are a few songs in it.
Oh, okay. People like that kind of variety. That's kind of a new trend. Yeah. So this is really an ambitious undertaking for you guys.
Yeah, it's
how long
really
has
large...
been the rehearsal process?
Well, it really... Pretty typically brief for us. We started rehearsals on just after Labor Day weekend, so September 8th. And so we've just been rehearsing.
About 6-7 weeks.
Yep, 4 or 5 nights a week since then.
Wow.
And it's been a little touch and go, but I'm pretty sure, I feel pretty good we're ready. We had a great run through of the show last night.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay. What was the audience response?
Well, we didn't have...
Our
staff and ensemble members that we're watching really seem to take to it, but we haven't had an audience yet. We won't until this Friday night at a first preview.
Oh, so you have just one preview, and the opening is Saturday night. The
18th. Yeah, sometimes I think about that, and I wish maybe we had a little bit of a longer preview process. But when you're a small itinerant storefront company, every day you're in the space space is at a premium in the city.
Yes, it is.
And so adding an extra week just for previews sometimes isn't really feasible.
All right, time now for a full-blown commercial for the show. Where, when, so forth, ticket price, everything, the whole deal.
Everyone who wants to see The Last Unicorn, and I hope everyone listening wants to see The Last Unicorn, should come see us at City Lit Theater. That's at 1020 West Bryn Mawr Avenue. In the Edgewater neighborhood on the second floor of Edgewater Presbyterian Church. Performances begin on Friday, October 16th and run through Saturday, November 14th with showtimes Thursdays and Fridays at 8 p.m., Saturdays at 3 p.m. and 8 p.m., and Sundays at 3 p.m. And the only exception to that is we're not doing 3 p.m. matinees on October 17th or November 7th.
Okay. Well, that's good. So you're doing a Saturday matinee.
Yep.
And how long is the show, and what are the ticket prices?
Show runs, we're still setting the runtime a little bit, but the current estimate, including 15-minute intermission, is 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Okay, that's
and,
good.
And tickets, full-price tickets, are $20. We have some discounts for industry and for students. And the box office line is 773-305-2897.
One more time, the radio rule, saying it twice.
773-305-2897.
What about your website?
www.prometheantheater, and theater spelled with an R-E at the end, .org.
Okay, great. And so you're doing the two on Saturday is cool, yeah.
Yeah, we really wanted to experiment with that because, as I said, it's not children's theater, but I think that the content is still... sufficiently mild that children could come and enjoy the show. And just as sort of a nod to, you know,
but
busy...
there are a lot of people who like to see a matinee on a Saturday, then go have dinner.
Yes, exactly, that too.
And this corridor down here on Bryn Mawr, you're right off the Bryn Mawr Red Line.
Right.
And the 151 and a bunch of buses on Sheridan. So it's easy to get to.
Yep, and there's that nice restaurant across the street, the Italian place, Francesca's, that people can park at. For evening shows, too, they would valet parking in front.
Oh, and they would include, if they have dinner, they can include parking for your show?
You can valet park and have dinner there and go see the show. But actually, they have a really good relationship with the City Lit space. So for evening shows, they can just park, valet park there if they want to, and then come see.
Oh, that's great. That's good to know.
Yeah,
that's good to know. You got to be excited about this.
I'm tremendously excited.
There's reasons. I know you wanted to do it, but we talked earlier, this is one of your passion plays, right? One of those things you had to do?
I think this is probably true of every artist. I have several projects in my head that I feel like over the course of my career, I have to at least attempt them. And this is definitely one of the big ones where I just couldn't. I don't think I could let myself rest until I'd at least given this a shot.
Well, that's you're to be admired for that, because so many people have these passions and they never act on them.
Yeah.
That it's so great that you guys in the performing arts have the chutzpah to just go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
And that's what makes Chicago theater great.
Yep. So we'll see how this goes. I'm really excited for opening weekend, and then I guess stay tuned, because maybe a couple of other dream projects in the next few seasons.
Well, give us some hints on some of the things Ed Rutherford would like to do.
Well, I don't want to say too much about this project, but we workshopped with the DCA again in the month of August as part of a program they do where theater companies can use some of their studio theater space for about a month to workshop scripts and projects. Promethean Theater Ensemble participated in that in the month of August this year. And there was a couple of scripts in there of mine that we took a look at. One of them...
Total ones you originally wrote.
Okay. Well, one of them is totally original, and one of them is another adaptation piece. Okay. The totally original one is called The Peculiar Case of Dorothy Gale. And basically what it is a short retelling of the Wizard of Oz story. So I guess it's kind of an adaptation too, but...
Well, no.
Retold as if it were an H.P. Lovecraft story. And if you're familiar with H.P. Lovecraft, or for those listening who aren't, H.P. Lovecraft, New England writer who sort of pioneered the American horror story. He wrote lots of stories that have... had their influence on like Buffy the Vampire Slayer and other shows and stories these days where there are...
So it's the Dorothy meets the vampire?
not quite the vampire, but the whole idea of sort of other dimensions with horrible beings living in those other dimensions that wish
Sounds
mankind
wild.
Harm. So the idea is Dorothy really is a witch, and Toto's sort of her demonic familiar. And Glinda the Good Witch is actually the form assumed by this horrible demon entity that wishes her harm. It really kind of campy. Horror fun. So we workshopped that script. And then the other project that's sort of coming down the pipeline that I'd love to see done in the next few seasons is there's another author that I'm a huge fan of called John Collier. Some people may know them if they're really big fans of Stephen Sondheim. There's a musical, short TV musical that Stephen Sondheim wrote called Evening Primrose.
Yes.
And
that show needs to be done too.
Oh, a stage version of that
yeah.
is also one of the projects.
Okay.
But John Collier wrote the original story, Evening Primrose, that musical is based on.
Okay.
So that's how I first encountered John Collier, but he's written all these other delightful short stories with that sort of weird, supernatural but humorous twists and stuff at the end. He actually, you can kind of tell when you read his stories, he wrote for The Twilight Zone also.
Yes, okay.
So I've been working on developing this script that sort of weaves several of those stories together into one evening with some sort of, you know, overarching framing device. So that's another script we've been workshopping that we might, It's still time to be cautious, but we might see come to full production in a season
or two.
Keep
going. We need that. As you know, we need new scripts.
Yeah.
And you know, and those of us who review, we're so tired of going and seeing the same relationship plays over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And family sagas. We need you guys to stretch and give us some interesting stuff. And these sound good, because those Buffy the Vampire, now those are all big hits, weren't they, on television?
Yeah. Yeah.
So a lot of people like that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Which is, I think, especially when we're speaking as a writer, I think that you always want to be true to yourself and your aesthetic, but finally you are trying to connect with people. That's really what theater, directing, acting, writing, that's what it is, trying to connect with an audience and tell them about yourself through the work, even if it's really, you know, this out there fantasy story about a unicorn. It still can be deeply personal.
Well, this is congratulations on getting step one of your passions.
Thank you.
That puts you so far ahead of so many other people. and I guess the lesson for that is, right, if you dream it, make it happen.
Yep, don't dream it, be it, to quote Rocky Horror Show.
Well, we're looking forward to it. And once more, Promethean Theater at City Lit.
Yep.
Upstairs at the church.
Yep. Performances start October 16th.
October 16th. It runs through?
November 14th.
Wow. Folks, go see a play this week. And Ed, thanks for the interview.
Thanks so much, Tom.